Welcome back to the second part of the Townships at 12 for today. And in this second half of the show, I will be talking with Christopher Viel, the Senior Research Associate in the Health Knowledge Area for the Conference Board of Canada. And we will talk about improving access to cancer therapies in Canada. But before we hear the interview, we will start part two with a new song by Ariana Grande. And the song is called Twilight Zone. And we will hear the interview right after the song, so please stay tuned. You're listening to The Cube, 88.9 FM.
Did I dream the whole thing? Was I just a nightmare?
For the Cube, and today I'm very happy to welcome Christopher Viel to the Townships at 12. Now, he is the Senior Research Associate, and we're going to be talking about improving access to cancer therapies, and that is for the Conference Board of Canada. So welcome, Christopher.
Thank you so much for having me, Maureen.
Could you tell us a little bit about your role as a Senior Research Associate and the work you do with improving access to cancer therapies in Canada?
Absolutely. So I'm a Senior Research Associate with the Conference Board of Canada. Specifically, I work in the health knowledge area of the Conference Board of Canada, and we also worked with our economics research team on this project, The Value of Access, Clinical and Economic Impacts of New Therapies for Three Hematological Cancers in Canada. We do a number of different research initiatives. This is just one of the pieces of research that we've done in the last year or so. Leading up to this, we had a 2022 report, where Tomorrow Can't Wait, which highlighted the economic and clinical potential of new therapies, new cancer therapies across Canada, which really sparked the interest to look a little bit deeper into some of the blood cancer therapies we did for this report. In addition to this, we, in 2024, in January, I believe it was, the conference board released a report titled Access and Time to Patient Prescription Drugs in Canada, where we examined the time it takes for drugs to become publicly available for patients with a breakdown by year, province, and therapeutic area, such as cancer care, which we'll be discussing today.
What are some of the biggest challenges in ensuring that Canadians have timely access to effective cancer treatments?
Yeah, that's a great question. So some of the main findings that we had in the report, I guess, were twofold. So the first thing we really wanted to know were, you know, what are the clinical and economic impacts of new therapies being developed and approved in Canada? So that was the first part of a report where we looked, like I said, at newly developed or applied therapies, and really how we defined those was, you know, Health Canada, once they approve a therapy, it goes through the approval process and the funding process. But there's also different therapies that are being applied for, you know, different therapeutic populations or different treatment lines. So we wanted to capture both of these kind of both of these therapy groups that were approved in the last 5 years. And model what the impacts would be if everyone in Canada who was eligible to receive these therapies were to receive them. So what we did is we modeled the number of potential life years lost that this could access could avert. And what we calculated was there's a minimum of 46,480 life years lost averted by accessing these new therapies. And there's over $760 million in lost economic societal contribution that could be averted. So that's the first piece we wanted to model. But the second piece, and to more in-depth answer your question, Maureen, was how can we contextualize this piece of access? So, you know, what is affecting or influencing patient access to these therapies across Canada? And what we found was that for the patients with multiple myeloma, Hodgkin lymphoma, and non-Hodgkin lymphoma, our experts, which were essentially blood cancer doctors across Canada, noted that we need to expedite the therapy approval process, we need to decrease barriers to rural patients receiving cancer care, and we need to evolve our healthcare system in parallel with changing patient needs, increased understanding of diseases, and an increased resource requirements that's coming with this shift in population.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now blood cancers, leukemia, lymphoma, and multiple myeloma, they require specialized treatments. And how have therapies for these cancers evolved in the recent years?
That's a great question. I'm not involved in the pharmaceutical research, initiatives. But what we really wanted to highlight in this project, like I said, it was for multiple myeloma, Hodgkin lymphoma, and non-Hodgkin lymphoma, was that by these new therapies coming down the pipeline had a significant advantage for these patients in comparison to the previous standards of care. So that's how we modeled these impact over this 7-year period from 2024 to 2030. We looked at what the progression-free survival, the effectiveness of these therapies was beyond that of what the old standard of care were, and that yielded our results that we posted in our report.
Okay. Are you aware of any new treatments or advancements?
In our report, we list a complete outline of all of the therapies that were approved and that fit our inclusion and exclusion criteria for the last 5 years. There's quite a few of them. So like I said, I invite everybody to access the report for free on the Conference Board of Canada website, and you can see all of the therapies that we've outlined there for what therapeutic population and for what treatment line as well.
Okay. How does Canada compare to other countries in terms of access to cutting-edge blood cancer treatments?
That's a great question, and not something that we addressed for this project. Really, what we focused on was for what can Canada do specifically to increase access to these newly developed and applied therapies across Canada. And really, what we looked at was the first piece was addressing the therapy approval pipeline first. So that if we want to break that down a little bit further, I want to kind of go into detail about, you know, there's several unavoidable characteristics that are influencing the time it takes for a therapy to be approved. The first unavoidable characteristics is the Canadian pharmaceutical market share size compared to other major nations such as the U.S. So Canada only accounts for about 2.2% of the global pharmaceutical sales at the time of this report. And what that does is it impacts whether or not and or when a drug is launched in Canada. Another unavoidable characteristic is the review process put in place to ensure patient safety and healthcare system funding sustainability. So this is put in place to ensure that therapies are safe, that they're addressing an unmet need, and that the system can afford it. So these two characteristics are unavoidable. And with these increasing the time that it takes for a therapy to get put forth to a patient, what we must do is kind of find nodes of impact within the approval process that we can expedite. A good example that we did highlight in this report was Project Orbis, which is a framework for concurrent submission and review of oncology projects across major global markets. Essentially, what it's there to do is to reduce the redundancies in the review process and get these much needed therapies to patients faster. Another piece that we highlighted was the rural component. So a number of patients across Canada are spread out quite geographically. So what we can do to kind of mitigate those people who are not, you know, in proximity to these major academic or major cancer care centers is to A, increase patient access to family physicians and enhance educational opportunities on newly developed and applied therapies, which the goal there would be to potentially increase access to these new therapies through avenues such as clinical trial enrollment. Another piece is to increase the use of digital health resources. So we saw this during the recent pandemic, how it really illustrated how we can successfully leverage this technology and that we need to continue to expand on this moving forward. This technology can reduce travel and it can also enhance the specialist and patient relationship. And the last component with the rurality is the lowering travel impact. So by increasing patient housing in proximity to major cancer centers and leveraging community healthcare settings for treatment delivery, we can really overall kind of reduce the barriers to impact for patients having to receive these therapies from rural areas. And the last piece, Maureen, that I wanted to touch on was really around, you know, the evolution of our healthcare system in general. So as I mentioned before, you know, as we move forward as a healthcare system, we need to make sure that our healthcare system is moving in parallel with the changing patient needs and the patient unmet needs. We want to ensure that there's increased understanding of these diseases. And as our successful research begins to deliver on, you know, an understanding of new treatments and new therapeutics, this is going to obviously have increased resource requirements, whether that be human resources requirements or financial resource requirements as well. So we need to make sure that that's moving in parallel with our population and our population needs.
What about telemedicine or mobile clinics for those living in rural areas?
Yeah, so very, very much of like what I touched on there. Like I said, the pandemic really highlighted the fact that we could leverage these technologies in rural areas for patients. I think at the end of the day, what the report highlights is that patients may need to access, they may not have a choice, but to access some of these major cancer centers, because many of these therapeutics or some of the new therapeutics that are being released are quite resource intensive. So they require extensive staff training. They might require, that the hospital participate in a clinical trial with delivery of that therapy prior to introducing it as a standard of care or funded therapeutic later down the line. So I think that it absolutely has its place for appointments and, like I said, enhancing that patient and specialist relationship. But I think we need to find a balance between that need for urban access for rural patients while also being able to reduce the travel time or the number of times they have to travel to those urban settings.
Okay, definitely. Now, lots of cancer treatments take a long time to be approved and funded in Canada. What is the current process and why does it take so long?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, there's several characteristics that are impacting the actual delays in treatment approval timeline. Okay, so I touched on two unavoidable characteristics that I think are really important because, you know, ultimately the long approval process is there to keep our patients safe. It's there to ensure that the therapeutics are addressing an unmet need. And it's there to ensure that the system can afford it when we get into funding negotiations, et cetera. As I mentioned before, there are nodes of impact where we are able to expedite this process. I gave the example of Project Orbis, like I said, which is a framework for concurrent submission and review of oncology products across a major global market. And essentially this and other processes reduces the redundancy in the review process. So it gets these therapies to patients faster, and it minimizes the resources on the Canadian side that it has for the review that it has to undergo.
Okay. Now, is there anything patients and caregivers and advocates can do to push for better access to life-saving therapies?
Yeah. Yes. I think that if we want to separate those, we can start with kind of the clinician side of things. So I think that participating in these research endeavors such as this, you know, we were fortunate enough to have a fantastic panel of hematological oncologists across Canada participate, get the word out on what are the impacts facing them on their professional side of things. So I think that that was a fantastic step in the right direction. On the patient side of things, I think that that's a large part of that is on the researcher side to involve patients in the decision-making process. Ultimately, these treatments are set up to benefit them and benefit society. So we need to make sure that the system, kind of the systematic things that we're putting in place are meeting the needs of patients, and that we're kind of planning in parallel with kind of in a direction that will benefit them and ultimately that they're able to kind of sustainably access.
Okay, interesting. Any final thoughts, Christopher? Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just, you know, I think on behalf of the Conference Board of Canada and our Health Knowledge Area, we really wanted to thank you for taking the time to chat with us today about this important subject. You know, our goal as researchers is to deliver meaningful work that can positively impact the healthcare system and the Canadian population. If anybody is interested to read more of the work that we did or any of those reports I mentioned earlier, feel free to go over to the Conference Board of Canada website where you can access all of these reports for free. And please keep your eye kind of to either our LinkedIn profile or our website to see any of the future reports. We have a lot of exciting work coming out over the next year. And yeah, we're excited to share it and see the impact it can have for patients and Canadian population.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Christopher Veal. He is the Senior Research Associate for the Conference Board of Canada, and we've been talking about improving access to cancer therapies in Canada. So important. I think every family is touched at some point by cancer. Thanks very much, Christopher.
Thank you so much, Maureen.
We can do it our way, and if love's just a game, then come and play.
That was a new one from Ed Sheeran, and the song is called Azizam. And next up, we have some health news here on the Townships at 12. And today we're going to focus on major lifestyle choices that can reduce your risk of cancer, because while not all cancers are preventable, many are influenced by how we live. First and foremost, don't smoke. Tobacco use remains the single biggest preventable cause of cancer worldwide, linked to lung, throat, mouth, bladder, and several other cancers. If you smoke, quitting is the best step you can take for your health. Next, maintain a healthy diet. A diet rich in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and lean proteins supports your immune system and helps keep your body strong. Try to limit processed meats, red meat, sugary foods, and highly processed items, which have been linked to certain cancers. Exercise regularly. Aim for at least 150 minutes of moderate activity each week. Physical activity helps you manage weight, reduce inflammation, and balance hormones, all of which are important for cancer prevention. Speaking of weight, maintaining a healthy body weight is key. Obesity is associated with increased risk for several cancers, including breast, colorectal, and pancreatic cancers. Limit alcohol consumption. The less you drink, the lower your risk. Alcohol has been linked to cancers of the mouth, liver, breast, and more. Protect your skin by using sunscreen and avoiding indoor tanning. Skin cancer, including melanoma, is largely preventable with proper sun safety. And finally, get screened. Regular cancer screenings and checkups can help detect changes early, when treatment is most effective. Know your family history and talk to your doctor about which screenings are right for you. And that's our health news for today. I'd like to thank my guest on the show today in the first half hour, Jennifer Bauer from Mental Health History. Sounds like a great conference on mental health coming up on May 8th. If you're interested, I would recommend that you sign up as soon as possible. And in the second part of today's show, Christopher Viel from the Health Knowledge Area of the Conference Board of Canada, talking about improving access to cancer therapies here in Canada. Thanks for listening, everybody. And don't forget, if you have an idea for an interview, please reach out to me at cjmqnews@gmail.com. We will close today's show with a song called I'm the One, and it's by Gail.
So stupid, you play games to lose. Run back to her, I won't run after you. How could you touch her? Thought she was bad news. Got me confused, cause you won't tell the truth. Nah. You heard me, told me that he saw you coming out her house. And I remember when you told me that you had to leave her, cause it wasn't working.
Choose between us, so don't pick me. Don't pick me. You know what?